This interview is being conducted with Captain Patrick G. Collins by Master Sergeant Robert H. Oliva at Marine Corps Schools, Quantico, Virginia. The subject of this interview is reconnaissance patrols. This interview is unclassified. Captain Collins, would you state your name, grade, and service number, please?
Patrick G. Collins, Captain, United States Marine Corps, 076230.
What were your duty assignments while you were in Vietnam?
The entire period that I was in Vietnam, from March until December of 1965, I was company commander of Delta Company, 3rd Reconnaissance Battalion.
And where were you physically located within Vietnam during these periods covered, sir?
Our entire operations were the Da Nang Enclave.
Would you discuss in detail the deployment of reconnaissance patrols, please?
Initially, when the Marines went into Vietnam, they were sent in as a battalion landing team organization. Each BLT at that time had a reconnaissance platoon attached. Initially, when 1-3 and 2-3 went in, they had a platoon from Delta Company with them. 3-9 had a platoon from Alpha Company, and 3-4 had a platoon from Bravo Company. These BLTs existed with their reconnaissance units from early March until the 12th of April, 1965. At that time, the platoons were sent back to the parent unit, which was Delta Company, and we became an operational reconnaissance company for the 9th Brigade in Vietnam on or about the 13th of April, 65. From 13 April, 65 until 27 May, 65, Delta Company operated as the 9th MEB Reconnaissance Company in Vietnam. During and prior to the 27th of May, the reconnaissance battalion itself landed in Vietnam on or about the 7th of May, 65. And once they got organized and they moved into the Da Nang Enclave, the companies were relocated, leaving A and B Company at Da Nang, Bravo Company at Chu Lai, and Charlie Company was sent up to Wei Phu Bai. The area I'll speak about mainly is the Da Nang Enclave, which is the one I know the best. In Da Nang, from the end of May up through September, A and D Company worked at the Da Nang Enclave. A and D Company worked with the 3rd Marines from around the 27th of May to the 11th of July. At that time, the 9th Marines became an operational unit in Vietnam, and D Company went under operational control of the 9th Marines. So the alignment at this time in July is with the reconnaissance units. It was A with the 3rd, B with the 4th, Charlie Company at Wei Phu Bai, and D Company with the 9th Marines. This setup lasted up until the 9th of September, at which time the entire reconnaissance battalion became under operational control of the division, and all the companies went back working for the battalion, who in turn, of course, was working for the division. Our operations initially in Vietnam, going back now to April, working with the 3rd Marines, we started out on the 20th of April, sending out patrols in daylight from 0800, and have to return back prior to dark, working in the Vietnamese countryside. These were mainly to orient ourselves with the terrain and the people, and to make contact with the villagers. I believe the popular terminology at that time was we were passing out candy and making friendly contacts at the time. On the 22nd of April, Delta Company had its first contact with a Viet Cong unit in a little town called Binh Thai. And from that time on, the contacts were frequent throughout that portion of the Da Nang Enclave. When A Company moved into the area, our activities in the Da Nang Enclave, as far as reconnaissance was concerned, was working within close proximity of the infantry units. This is from 2,000 to 6,000 meters in front of the infantry units, mainly operating observation posts and working patrols throughout the countryside, watching for enemy movement. Starting in June, we started expand our patrol activities further into the further to the west and to the north. This is into a mountainous area, looking for further VC activity throughout the area. These patrols sometimes range as far as 18 miles from the nearest friendly unit in the Da Nang area. Sometime during the month of July, there was established within the TAOR and outside the TAOR an area known as the ROR, the Reconnaissance Area Responsibilities. This area around Da Nang and also around the other two enclaves was an area where Marine reconnaissance units could work at much greater ranges than they had been working. Starting in July, our patrols started to range out 15, 18, 20 miles from Da Nang. The main mission of our patrols was surveillance, looking for VC units, and as the summer months drew on and getting into the fall, we became vitally interested in looking for large units moving into the Da Nang enclave. In October of 65, the reconnaissance battalion itself started to operate as a unit in the Da Nang enclave. On 18 October through the 24th of October, the reconnaissance battalion with C and D Company went on a reconnaissance battalion-sized patrol into the complex known as Happy Valley, at which time they discovered a large VC encampment in the area and had numerous contacts throughout that patrol with VC units. Into the month of December to 65, the reconnaissance battalion was starting to operate at greater ranges they had been working. The idea was to establish company-sized patrol bases in the mountains to the west and to the north with the main mission of surveillance and keeping under observation and making contact with VC units throughout the area. The recon units in the Da Nang enclave from April through December had a variety of tasks besides surveillance and observation type patrols. They made two amphibious rubber boat night operations on the coastal areas around Da Nang. They made numerous river searches in the Da Nang area. They're involved in some demolition work. They got involved in quite a few operations where they were acting as surveillance, observation, and a sort of a screen on the flanks of infantry units working in the Da Nang area. They were involved in tank operations, long-range patrols utilizing tanks on the flat sandy area south of Da Nang. They were involved in one operation which might be called a kidnapping operation, which wasn't too successful. But in the entire period, basically the unit was involved 75% of their time in patrolling throughout the Da Nang enclave. These patrols consisted of anywhere between 10 and 80 men going out anywhere from 3 to 10 days, coming back in, resting for a period of a couple of days, and going out again. Again, the mission always was surveillance and observation, but of course these surveillance and observation missions quite frequently turned into making contact with the Viet Cong and having some quite spirited actions throughout that time. In reference to some of the contacts we've had with the Viet Cong, initially the first contact with Viet Cong units in Vietnam was by a reconnaissance unit on the 22nd of April. This was with Delta Company with the working for the 3rd Marines. And I might make reference this time to an operation which took place on the 14th of May of 65 involving three 10-man patrols from Delta Company that were working into an area known as Elephant Valley, which is 12 to 15 miles northwest of Da Nang. Patrols on this day, particular day, were sent into this area to three different locations to reconnoiter the area out, to gather information which was to be sent back to the 3rd Marines CP so that they at that time could determine some future course of action for an operation they're going to run into that area. Initially, patrols went in the night of the 13th of May. The first patrol, 10-man patrol, went into the landing zone led by Lieutenant Second Lieutenant William Van Cat, made contact with 5 EC and killed all 5 of them. A second patrol came in shortly after them, led by myself, a 10-man patrol, and we moved off into a different direction. And a third patrol landed about 2 miles to the east of us. As we moved into our areas at night, we stopped them bivouac for the night, and a large VC unit moved into the valley in the area we were at. In the particular area where I was at, a VC unit from 50 to 75 men moved into camp approximately 150 meters from us for the night. Prior to daylight, they moved out to the west, leaving 9 men behind. At daylight, these 9 men were about 100 meters from where we were located at, so we jumped them, killing 2 of them. That small group of VC proceeded due west down the road towards the direction where Lieutenant Van Cat had his 10-man patrol. That time I radioed him and told him they were coming. He jumped them, sustaining casualties on them, but how many he wasn't sure. At that time he himself took 2 casualties. He radioed me that he was moving to the high ground where he was initially supposed to go and starting to move up. And as he moved to the high ground, he ran into a hardcore unit that was entrenched on the high ground, which they inflicted some more casualties in his small patrol. Upon hearing this, my group moved down to the low ground, proceeded to the west up a road trying to come to his assistance, and we ran into a hardcore group entrenched on a bend in the road to our front and to our flanks. After a small encounter with this hardcore group, we, out of the 10 of us that were moving along the road, there was 4 casualties on this group. Upon hearing our conversations between myself and Lieutenant Van Cat over the radio, the third patrol started to proceed to our assistance. Now they had to cover a distance of about 3.5 miles, and as they were proceeding into the area we were at, they came in upon a VC unit that was dug in an ambush position across the road, which they were coming, but the ambush was laid in facing due west. In other words, the ambush was laid in facing the direction of which we would have to come out. So this small group led by First Sergeant Rogers attacked this ambush position, and they inflicted casualties upon the VC, drove the ambush off, taking some casualties themselves. During the course of this entire action, we radioed our reports back. Our communication, we had difficulty with our communications. We had to relay through an Army OE that was flying overhead. Was relaying our transmissions for us. These transmissions, in the course of the relay from myself to the OE back to the 3rd Marine CP, were very garbled. In addition, what caused added to the confusion as far as communications are concerned, a VC unit somewhere in the high ground was sending transmissions to the OE also in clear Midwestern accented English, which greatly added to the confusion. The 3rd Marines initially were going to send a group out to give us a hand out there, but the information they received from the OE and from this VC station added to the confusion, and the relief force was not sent out, mainly to the fact that they believed a much larger unit of VC were located in the area. The VC that were actually in the area, the main body of the VC, were located on the high ground above us and to the hills around us. Apparently we'd blundered into a VC unit that was encamped in the dense undergrowth. The aircraft that came into the area to give us assistance initially were the Marine H-34s and Army Hueys. They received an intense volume of ground fire. This volume of ground fire resulted in 2 H-34s being shot up badly, an Army OE being shot down, and the Army Hueys receiving quite a few rounds into their fuselage. In due time, Marine Attack Squadron 513 sent aircraft into the area, and they attacked the VC upon our directions. We marked the areas where to go with smoke and various means we had at hand, and they went after the VC unit and entrenched the high ground into the jungle with their 250-pound bombs and the napalm. The unusual thing for the VC, which is one of the few times in the course of the months I spent in Vietnam, the VC determined a course of action to stand and fight it out with the aircraft attacking them. As soon as the jets would come in, dump their load, the VC would hide, and as the jets passed over, they'd open up on them. So for a period of about from about 6:30 in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we had a very spirited action going throughout this area. The dense undergrowth and the terrain added to the difficulties for ourselves and for the VC. They had difficulty deploying the units to get after us, and we had difficulty maneuvering in the area. An Army Huey came in and evacuated the one patrol, Lieutenant Van Catt, which had by that time one dead and four wounded. And they brought them out. One Army Huey carrying 10 men out took an intense volume of ground fire. When he came into the zone, his gunner got out, covered the Marines, loading the wounded into the aircraft. They took off with all 10 Marines in the Huey, made it back to the 3rd Marine CP, where he crash landed the whole works at the 3rd Marine CP. By that time, the group I was with had moved back into an open area. We started digging in with entrenching tools, formed a small perimeter, and we were finding out with the VC in a large open area there. Thanks mainly to the assistance from the aircraft, from the jet aircraft from the Marines, they greatly assisted us keeping the VC off our backs. We were vastly outnumbered, and it was throughout the assistance of the aircraft, we kept them off our backs. The other patrol had difficulty. Marine H-34s pulled them out. By the time the two patrols were out, they brought some helicopters back in with jet coverage, and they pulled our group out, which had by this time, out of the 10 of us, there was 5 wounded, we got them out. The overall course of the action that day covered a period of about 8 hours. How many casualties were inflicted upon the VC? It's not an accurate count. I estimated 22 KIAs among the VC. That's what we know for sure just by after-action reports. With the amount of aircraft that were in the area, there's a possibility there could have been heavier casualties among the VC. Later on in the afternoon, they broke contact and they withdrew, and this course enhanced our abilities to get out of the area. This action by members of Delta Company was one of 62 similar actions we had in Vietnam at that period of time. But it was one of the most intense operations we had. Not the most intense, but one of the most intense. It was the first contact with Marines against a hardcore unit in Vietnam.
Would you discuss with us, Captain Collins, some of the problems of reconnaissance, please, sir?
There are a variety of problems you encounter in reconnaissance units, but I believe right now there are 3 problem areas which affect the effectiveness of reconnaissance units, either in Vietnam or throughout the Marine Corps. I think the prime problem you'll find in a division reconnaissance unit is the selection of personnel to work in reconnaissance units. And I don't mean to imply that you need a super marine to be in a reconnaissance unit, but you do need an individual in a reconnaissance unit, preferably who has prior infantry experience. The fallacy that you encounter reconnaissance units altogether too much is that you get individuals in there entirely inexperienced, so they're out of ITR or straight out of basic school in the case of second lieutenants, or you get individuals that are in division reconnaissance units that are sent from other organizations because they are some sort of a misfit. For a reconnaissance unit to be effective in the Marine Corps, it's going to have personnel support. And I believe for the first time in the history of reconnaissance battalions since they were formed 7 or 8 years ago, this past May, the reconnaissance battalion, and particularly my company, got a great deal of support from the 3rd Marines and the 3rd Division in the selection of personnel. And all we got were individuals who wanted to be there to do a variety of different type of task work in support of infantry operations. They had experience. By experience, they had 2 or 3 years in infantry battalions, and they are just a little bit older than the average Marine. This maturity of individuals in reconnaissance units, I think, is of a prime factor in the fact that working in the standard infantry operation, you work with a large volume of people normally, in an area that's relatively close to your base of operations, whether it be on a main line of resistance or in a company-sized patrol base or something similar. The reconnaissance units, ideally, you're supposed to be working in areas that are somewhere between 2,018, 20,000 meters from their nearest friendly unit. And to get into these type of operations, working with 9 or 10 men, or platoon-sized operations, a long ways from home, and just it does take somebody I feel is a little bit older and a little bit more mature, and it does have a great deal of experience. You should get people in reconnaissance battalions that have had the basic training, so you don't have to spend so much time working and training in the basics before you can start getting into the more sophisticated areas of reconnaissance. By sophisticated areas, I mean the techniques of scouting and patrolling. I feel the average Marine is deficient in his techniques of scouting and patrolling, and it does take quite a deal of good hard work to make a unit proficient in scouting and patrolling techniques and procedures. And in addition, with the personnel that you get in there, I found that the main deficiency in the training that the Marines have coming into a reconnaissance battalion, this is from PFC through the lieutenants as platoon leaders are, that we had a great difficulty in the lack of ability of the Marine to read a map. Now, an individual working, say, 1,000 meters from his position is not much trouble. Now, if he's got an average background in map reading, he can, and if he knows the terrain, he can find his way out and find his way back. But it's a different tune when you have to work 10 to 20 miles from your nearest friendly unit for a period of 8 to 10 days. Your knowledge of map reading has to be extremely good. And this, I felt, was the greatest difficulty I ran into. I felt I had very extremely capable individuals in the platoons, corporals and sergeants, platoon sergeants, etc. But I just couldn't send a squad-sized patrol out or a two squad-sized patrol out with the, say, buck sergeant squad leader, take the patrol out, because he just couldn't read a map. He was capable of everything else, but it took such a great deal of time to train this individual into reading a map proficiently. We also found this, the lieutenants coming out of basic school had this difficulty. Or, as far as that goes, the lieutenants we had in the battalion had that difficulty. It was in map reading. An individual had worked in a reconnaissance unit before and had worked with map reading, he was all right. But if he hadn't had too much infantry experience or reconnaissance experience, he experienced a great deal of difficulty in his map reading. Another area that we found difficulty in, and it's one of the primary areas of importance in a reconnaissance unit, is communications. For a reconnaissance unit to be successful, you have to be able to send your messages back to someone who is going to take action on them. The system we set up, or rather Lieutenant Colonel Blanchard set up in Vietnam, was a system where the patrol would be carrying two radios with them. They'd spot some type of enemy activity, and that information would be sent back directly to the regimental CP that the patrol was working out of. As this information was sent back in the regimental CP, it was also monitored at the recon battalion. It was also monitored at the Division G3. So you had three sources there that were receiving information, any of which could take action upon it. And this might be requesting artillery fire, evacuations, or maybe sending information back in that the regimental commander could formulate some plan of action on. So the necessity here for reconnaissance unit is good communications. Now, the PRC-10s we had in the companies, where you rate 13 in a company, for example, the ones I had were issued to Marines in early 1953 when they first came out. Out of 13 PRC-10s, somewhere after the first part of May, I only had four that I could count on, and this caused extreme difficulties for us. By using a variety of field-expedient antennas and spotting various communication vehicles around the countryside, we could establish communication links. We had successful communications. I've worked at ranges that are up to 18 miles of PRC-10 directly into the regimental CP. But there are times our communications failed us. And this is due to the lack of the type of equipment. The PRC-47 is a good radio, but after a period of 5 months of extensive field use, we found that the vox meter in the radio, we had difficulty with that, and the radio, I just could not count on that radio taking on a patrol. We invariably go on patrol and the radio would not work after a period of a couple days. Towards the end of our tour in Vietnam, we started to receive the PRC-25s, and my initial impressions on that type of that radio is that it's an extremely capable radio. And when we received these radios in the units, our communications capability, I'd say, increased twofold. But the for reconnaissance units to be successful, again, I stress the point that you need personnel to work with. You don't need a super marine by any means. You don't need anybody who is going to run around with a green beret and sunglasses and pull all kinds of fascinating stunts. You need a good, solid infantryman who is mature, and you need some good communication equipment to work with. With these two factors in mind, an individual or a reconnaissance unit working as a support unit for an infantry can give them the support that they need. Without this, you run into difficulties and all together, or in instances rather, there's times when the reconnaissance units have not given infantry units the support that they need or requested, and usually it's due to the difficulties that I've mentioned here previously. That's all I had to say, Sergeant.
Thank you, Captain Collins, for this interview.